Shout out to Claritev for supporting this episode and providing us with the samples. I've been battling allergies for years now. Let me tell you, they've been a real ordeal in my life. Luckily for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to ClaritinD.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed.
The biggest opportunity for most industries, for most of us, are the 80% in the middle. I call that the indifference category, right? The people that like their existing person fine. They think they're doing a good job. They have other stuff in their life and their business that's more important for them to worry about right now. And for a lot of us, I think our ability to be successful in growing our business and reaching more of the people that we want to work with is our ability to successfully disrupt that indifference. And I did that by finding things that had nothing to do with my core offering. Come to this wine tasting, come play golf, come to this roundtable lunch where we're all going to talk about our business. And that allowed me to meet, I think, a lot more people than I would have met otherwise if I were just waiting around for, hey, do you want to meet my financial advisor and come into his office to learn more about the way he works?
What's up, guys? Welcome to The Greatness Machine. I'm your host, Darius Mershaz, and I'm so pumped to have you here with me. Now, listen, The Greatness Machine is about two things. Number one, people are living their passions. And number two, those who are creating greatness in the world. Doing both of these despite the odds against them. Each episode, we're going to feature interviews of world-class speakers and business leaders, showcasing their origin story, what made them tick, what got them to where they are now, so it can help you step into your greatness within your own life, business, and career. Occasionally, you might hear a few solo episodes from myself, moi as I say, as I leverage my 20 years in entrepreneurship as a CEO to help you grow and level up in your journey to scale your life and your business. So come be a fly on the wall, enjoy the conversation and messages, and I'm stoked to have you guys here.
Guys, welcome to The Greatness Machine. I'm your host, Darius Mershazadeh, and boy, do we have a special guest. My main man, Derek Coburn, is in the house. What's up, my brother?
What's up, man? It's good to be here with you. Excited to spend some time with you.
Yeah, we're going to have some fun. Guys, as you guys know, those who are loyal audience to The Greatness Machine is about two things. We're about those who are living their passions and those who are creating greatness in the world. And my main man, Derek, here is both living lots of passion and lots of greatness. We're going to be diving into that in just a second. But hey, I always like to start off with a little bit of an origin story. Do you mind if I give a background on how I connected with you?
That'd be awesome.
So those of you guys that follow the show know that I got sucked into the rabbit hole known as Clubhouse back in January. I even did a podcast episode about it. And I mean, I was like sucked in like bad. I was like, man, this is like crack. Not that I've done crack, but I can understand. I was super addicted to it for a hot minute. And there's this guy in the room. We were in a bunch of the same rooms together, these business rooms. And I heard Derek talking about this business we're going to be talking about that he's in, Cadre. And I was like, man, this guy seems super interested. He's doing events. He's bringing in some really cool speakers. Man, I want to connect with him. And there was a handful of people that I reached out to offline. Derek was one of them. We ended up connecting. And he even connected me on one of our previous guests, Victoria, that was just on the show. And man, I'm so happy to have you here. So thanks for connecting with me, brother. We're going to have some fun right now.
Awesome, dude. Let's do it.
Guys, I also like to dive into the formal bio once I tell you how I met the person who's on the show or guests on the show. So I'm going to read it so I don't butcher it because I always butcher everything when I don't read it. Derek Coburn is the author of Networking is Not Working and the co-founder and CEO of Cadre, an un-networking community in Washington, D.C., which currently supports over 100 CEOs and business leaders. He's also an entrepreneur, a family man, all-around badass. And we're going to be diving into well, you know, what is Cadre? You know, how did you get to what you got into on the entrepreneur side? I know we're talking about earlier on the show that you sold a business, that you're still in it as an employee for the first time in your life. And so I'd love to hear a lot about how did you get into entrepreneurship? You know, everyone kind of finds their path in their own funky way. Where are you from? Let's start from the beginning, man.
Cool, man. Let's do it. So I, in my junior year of college, I took an internship with American Express Financial Advisors, where I essentially was cold calling for a couple of the financial advisors. And, you know, I think just because I had developed a muscle for dealing with rejection, a muscle for not taking rejection personally, it allowed me to be better, I think, than most people when it came to cold calling. And I was so good at it, in fact, that the head of the office, who oversaw like 150 financial advisors at the time, had me give a talk at the end of my internship to the advisors whose actual job it was at the time to sort of do this, about how to do it more successfully. And so that was kind of a good indicator for me that was probably the right career path for me going out of college. I had multiple offers. I ended up starting my career with MassMutual as a financial advisor. And back then, you know, there were not financial planning majors at colleges like there are now. You were successful or not based on your ability to rack up a bunch of appointments, meet a lot of people, and again, deal with the rejection. I was making 500 cold calls a day for probably 3, 4, 5 years. And I knew exactly how many phone calls I needed to make to know how many would pick up the phone, how many would give me an appointment, backing out the people that canceled on me or stood me up, and all the way down to how much money I would probably make at the end of the year. And so that was my initial sort of launch into my professional career. I eventually transitioned. I got to a point where I had a nice client base and I didn't have to cold call anymore. Even though I was good at it, it wasn't something that I loved to do for obvious reasons. And I shifted my time and attention to going to networking events. And I think, and I talk about this in my book, like I think that the difference between going to these catch-all networking events and cold calling is that you're not having people slam the phone down on you. You're not getting stood up for an appointment. You can go to networking events and have perfectly nice conversations with perfectly nice people all day long. And if you're not paying attention, you probably won't realize that you're wasting a lot of your time. And so I started, instead of doing the big networking events, I started curating my own smaller events where I would invite my existing clients, my existing strategic partners, and have them invite guests and create these roundtables where everyone would talk about their business and how we could help each other out. And eventually that turned into Cadre, which we started in 2011. So we're celebrating our 10th year this year. And essentially just took a lot of what I learned about how to connect with people in support of my wealth management business and started offering it as a way to bring CEOs and entrepreneurs in DC together. So I'll pause there to see if you have any questions or if you want me to keep going. But that was sort of how we arrived. And I've been sort of running both businesses in tandem side by side ever since.
Yeah, wow. There's so much meat on this bone. So I want to back up. Are you from the Mid-Atlantic area originally?
Yeah. So I grew up in between Baltimore and DC, closer to Baltimore. So I identified with being from there. But that was, you know, I moved back there after college in 1998 for a few years. And I was close enough to DC. I realized that one thing that people that are not from Baltimore might not know is in Baltimore, the way a lot of business gets done, it's how you answer two questions. What high school did you go to and what company does your daddy work for? And if you don't have great answers to those two questions, you're sort of fighting an uphill battle. I mean, like literally you could go to Harvard Law School and that won't matter as much as if you went to one of the more prestigious private high schools in Baltimore. So I saw DC and I started venturing to DC and I recognized that the people in DC made more money. They didn't care where you were from. And at the time, the women were hotter. So it made sense for me to drive there. And I started by scheduling 10, 12 appointments on a Tuesday in DC. And then it got to the point where I had enough action that I could do 2 days in DC. And then when it got to the point where I had 3 days of these in DC, I moved to DC in 2000. And I've lived in DC ever since. Just moved to the suburbs out of DC proper. It took a pandemic to get me and my family out of the city, but had lived there for 20 years.
So I grew a business in the Mid-Atlantic area for a hot second, and I ended up, it was a joint venture I exited out of. It was in Arlington, Virginia.
That's where I live.
Oh, cool. Yeah, so it was off not George Mason Highway, but Lee Highway.
Yep.
So yeah, I spent quite a bit of time in the Residence Inn in Arlington.
Nice.
Yeah, a week out of the month. But it was funny. I learned two things. Now, I actually lived in D.C. for a hot minute as well in 2000. I interned at the White House under the Clinton administration. And so my cousin was living right outside of the Ballston station.
Yep. You know,
yeah. So I would commute in and then I ended up living in D.C. But I go back out there to run this business and I get to work at like 9:30 in the morning and nobody's there. And I'm coming in from San Francisco, which is where I was living for a long time. And I'm like, where the hell is everybody? And my manager's like, Beltway traffic's really bad, Darius. And yeah. I said, I'm from California, man. Like, you can't tell me traffic's bad. So one day my brother schedules me to be it right outside Baltimore Green. Can't remember the name of the city, but it's like a little town outside Green something.
Glen Burnie?
No, the name's not important, but he schedules me to be there at 3 o'clock in the afternoon for a meeting. So I leave at like 2 after lunch from Arlington. Excuse me, Fairfax. I was in Fairfax. That's where my office was. I drive to right outside Baltimore, and the meeting gets done at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Greenbelt, that's what it was.
Greenbelt, there you go. Yep.
So I get done at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and I'm done. Cool. Yeah, yeah, you know where this story's going.
Oh, yeah.
And I have to drive back to Fairfax. And I get on the freeway, and I was like, I ate my words at that moment. And from that moment forward, I was the manager of those cool with my, because my staff was coming in. What I didn't know about Mid-Atlantic area, which is kind of an interesting thought around how business gets done there, is that you got a lot of people coming from Maryland, Virginia. I had people drive in from Pennsylvania, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm from California. Like, driving across state lines is not normal, right?
Yeah.
So I live in Texas now, and it's not normal here either. So that's it. I learned a lot about the culture there. And one of the greatest things I learned about the culture of the Mid-Atlantic is, like, the people are salt of the earth. Some of the best people in the world, in my opinion. You said, so you grew up in this environment. Where'd you go to college?
Salisbury, like by the beach in Maryland.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's a smaller school, isn't that correct?
Yep.
Yeah, and so you get out of that, and when you were working for Mass Mutual and doing this and pounding the pavement, were you building like a local business? Like, was your network all local in that Mid-Atlantic tri-state like kind of area?
Yep.
And so when you get out and you start moving into, you know, this idea of, you know, warmer leads versus cold leads, right? Which is essentially cold. I grew up in cold calling too. So yep. It's one of those things, right? It's, have you ever seen the movie Free Solo?
Nope.
Listeners.
I know what it's about though. Yep.
Yeah. It's a guy that climbs the face of El Capitan, and the part of his brain that has no fear, like, doesn't kick in. Like the fear amygdala or whatever, like, there's no fear response in his brain. They're running CAT scans and the guy like has no fear response. I actually think there's an element to that, to people who are good at sales and good at cold calling. Like, there's that, like, you just doesn't phase you when you get told no. Do you think that was part of your success, was you just didn't get fearful about being told no? How did that start? How did you go from this newbie kid essentially to crushing it and then teaching people how to cold call?
I think for me, I had to learn more of the hard way. So I had a rough time as a kid, I think, getting along with other kids. Just my mom has told me this story. I don't really remember it, but I guess when I was like 8 or 9, I went and knocked on a kid's door in the neighborhood to ask his mom why he didn't want to play with me. And then I moved to a new school and a completely new county, and ended up in a situation where I like was just not fitting in. And I think in hindsight, it was me trying to fit in. It was me trying to be somebody that I thought other kids would like. But I'll tell you, like, you know, one of the more obvious, you know, like really hard scenarios that I had to experience as a kid was in seventh grade. It was a new school. I had probably been there for 3 months, and I don't remember the chain of events that took place. But the result was I had an entire classroom of kids, 25 to 30 kids, chanting, "Who do we hate? We hate Derek." And this probably lasted like 2 minutes or so. And so I think that it was, and by the way, I have a theory. Like, I grew up, and I just discovered this theory recently. I grew up in a home with parents that provided a really unconditional, loving environment for me. And my mom thought I was like the greatest thing in the world. And so I think that as I have kids now, 11 and 8, 2 boys, and I'm seeing them start to have certain interactions with kids, you know, I think that I would come home and my mom would say, you know, you're amazing. You're perfect. Like if you had a conflict with some other kid, it must be their fault. It's not your fault. And so I think that I maybe never learned the lesson. Maybe history just kept repeating itself because I was literally like, gosh, I mean, like how, like why would somebody not want to hang out with me? So all of this is to say, you know, a friend of mine told me a few years ago, I'd shared that story. And she said, well, that sort of sounds like the origin story of Cadre to me. And I was like, what do you mean by that? She's like, well, you wanted to create community and you went for the interactions that you experienced as a kid. And I was like, oh, that's pretty interesting. That I'll add that onto my origin story in addition to I just got, you know, beat up mentally, which built my rejection muscle, which was also a good story that worked for me for a while too.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Kids can be dicks. That's for sure. I didn't have that happen to me in seventh grade, but I did get punched in the face for no reason. And that, which is like a physical manifestation of someone telling you, you suck. What's that?
I've had that happen too.
Yeah, that happened a couple of times. I mean, I was kind of a smart ass I don't think it's like that now. I think they bully each other on Instagram instead, which is not, I heard it's worse. I don't know. I guess maybe it is.
Well, I'll tell you, there's a professor, Jonathan Haidt, out of New York. He wrote Coddling of the American Mind. He's written a couple of really great books. And he actually said that the incidence of depression, of cutting, of suicide in younger girls has dramatically increased with the advent of social media. And it hasn't really moved the statistics in those categories for boys at all. And his rationale is the way boys pick on each other and bully each other, it's physical, it's in person. The way girls tend to do it, it's more, you know, calling names, it's more, you know, shaming. And so the social media, you know, he believes is much more dangerous, you know, for girls that are like 10, 11, 12, 13 than it is for
women. Wow. Yeah. There's many reasons why I'm glad social media didn't exist when I was in junior high and high school. And that's probably, I mean, I don't know if that would have affected me because I was a boy, but yeah, I can't imagine. I mean, I have an 11-year-old and a 7-year-old and they don't have phones yet. And I'm trying to keep them off of it as long as I can for a lot of these reasons. Cause I'm like, oh, they don't need this shit. You know, yeah. I don't want to deal with it. And my wife's like, hey, you know, our oldest, he's the only kid that doesn't have a phone. And I'm like, well, it's COVID, so he's not going anywhere. You know, right. You know, I'll deal with it when I have to deal with it. But so that's interesting how our life experiences. And I have some similar stories where I look now and I'm like, oh, that's why I do what I do. Right. And a lot of it is around, you know, getting community together and getting people to want to be a part of something greater than themselves. And when I listen to your story about Cadre, that hit me right away. I'm like, oh, this is a person that's trying to build community. This is a person that's trying to elevate a collective whole and to do it in this interesting way. I want to back up though, because, you know, I'm on a part of my journey right now where I exited my business. I know you exited your business a couple of years ago. I just did this past July and I'm kind of playing around with what's next. And I do believe there's an element of building community around what's next.
Yep.
And so when you decided you wanted to do that, was it with the intention of, oh, I'm going to use this as a business development tool? Or was it with the intention of, yeah, I just don't like the way these conferences are run and I want to do my own thing?
Yeah. So, you know, I made a decision right away that since we were going to be charging money for Cadre, that it would be inauthentic for me to use it as a way to market my wealth management business. And, you know, when I was doing it before, I was just gathering people and I wasn't charging them because I was doing it to build relationships and the ancillary benefit would be, you know, clients, referrals, what have you. But I've never sort of used my, you know, my position in Cadre to market my wealth management business. And sure, some people know what I do and some people have reached out and we've worked together, but I never wanted to mix those two up, if you will. I ran them very separately.
So originally though, before, so it sounds like the Cadre was born out of this thing where you were doing events for to help build a kind of a ecosystem for generating biz dev. And then from that, you pivoted to, no, this is its own thing and I'm charging for it and they're going to be a part of it. And it would be unethical for me to start like trying to sell my stuff, pimp my stuff out to people.
Exactly. But
early on, it was born out of this idea of building an ecosystem for lead management or for building clients. Is that a correct understanding?
Yeah, I think so. Yep. And it was also just me being wired as a giver, me being wired as somebody that wanted to, that loves connecting people. And so I was never like really overtly pitching, or in fact, like when I would bring people together, I would say, like, talk about your business here, but don't follow up with anybody later to say, hey, like, let's meet next week so I can tell you even more about how awesome I am. So, you know, I understand, I've always understood it's a long game in building relationships, but it was, you know, recognizing that I could ask my clients for referrals and I might get some referrals. But I would increase the likelihood of meeting more people that would be good for me to meet if I had my clients invite their friends and their colleagues to come to events or to come to things that had nothing to do with meeting a financial advisor. So I was hosting these roundtable lunches, which are still a core part of what we do with Cadre. I would host wine tasting events. There was an article about 5 years ago that I read, and it was based in the property and casualty insurance industry, which I don't really know much about. And it was a survey of clients, and the clients were asked to sort of rate their relationship with their insurance producer. And 10% of the people surveyed said they loved their provider and would never leave them no matter what. Like, they just had this amazing relationship. So you look at the survey and you say, all right, the good news is only 10% of people out there love their existing provider. That means 90% don't love them. Well, the bad news is that only 10% disliked their existing insurance broker. That's where, in my opinion, referrals and Google search and things like that come into play. I feel like the biggest opportunity for most industries, for most of us, are the 80% in the middle. I call that the indifference category, right? The people that like their existing person fine. They think they're doing a good job. They have other stuff in their life and their business that's more important for them to worry about right now. And for a lot of us, I think our ability to be successful in growing our business and reaching more of the people that we want to work with is our ability to successfully disrupt that indifference. And I did that by finding things that had nothing to do with my core offering. Come to this wine tasting, come play golf, come to this roundtable lunch where we're all going to talk about our business. And that allowed me to meet, I think, a lot more people than I would have met otherwise if I were just waiting around for, hey, do you want to meet my financial advisor and come into his office to learn more about the way he works?
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. In the world of successful partnerships, names like Procter & Gamble, Ben & Jerry, and Supply and Demand echo through business history. But when it comes to growing your business, who are the perfect partners? That's you and Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. We're talking from launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to did we hit $1 million order stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling shipping supplies or promoting productivity programs, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Picture this, a time when my business was facing a tough hurdle and I wasn't sure how to break through. But then came the breakthrough moment, a game changer that took my business to the next level. You know, what I absolutely adore about Shopify is its unparalleled ability to adapt and grow with your ambitions. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 75 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/Darius, all lowercase. That's D-A-R-I-U-S. Go to shopify.com/Darius now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/Darius. Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with the samples. Hey there, friends. It's Darius Mashazda here, and I have a little confession to make. You see, I've been battling allergies for years now, and let me tell you, they've been a real ordeal in my life. Allergies have been my constant companion. They stop me from fully enjoying the little things in life, canceling plans with friends because of sudden allergy attack, to missing out on an outdoor activity because of sneezing fits. Allergies have been a real nuisance. Luckily, for those of us who live with symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing and a runny nose, itchy, watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease. I've been a Claritin D user for many, many years now, and let me tell you, it's made a world of difference. Since I started using Claritin D, my symptoms have improved dramatically. Now, I can breathe easier, enjoy outdoor activities without worrying about sneezing fits, and truly live my life without being held back by allergies. Ready to live as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter now. You don't even need a prescription. Go to ClaritinD.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear, uses directed.
Yeah, said nobody ever.
Yeah.
So, it's funny. So it's really creating an ecosystem for success, right? And surrounding yourself with people who you want to potentially do something with in the future, but doing it in a way where solicitation is not part of the equation, right? And that's really smart.
Are you guys enjoying the show so far? Darius here. And by now you might know that I'm passionate about a few things. Pizza, pink unicorns, core values, and down and dirty, interesting conversation with some amazing people. However, the biggest one that I've spent most of my career on is entrepreneurship and scale. You see, look, my first few years in business, I spent like probably a good 5 years of my life getting my freaking teeth kicked. I mean, really getting crushed. And I learned a lot during that time period. So I spent the greater part of the last couple of years helping entrepreneurs scale their businesses in a meaningful way without going through the same growing pains that I did. And what I realized is that CEOs and business leaders don't know if they can scale, and thus they do the right thing at the wrong times. This causes them to lose clarity, lose momentum, alignment, and the bottom line is you lose money. And look, you don't have to do that. It's why I created what I call the scalability assessment, and you can access it 100% for free. That's right, guys. There are perks to listening to The Greatness Machine. All you have to do is go to dariusscale.com. That's D-A-R-I-U-S scale, S-C-A-L-E.com. And there, you can check to see if your business is set up to scale properly. It's going to give you a scalability score at the end, and it's also going to give you some clarity on what you can do next. Once again, guys, that's www.itsdariusscale.com. Once again, guys, it's dariusscale.com. And now back to the show.
So started, you know, obviously the original idea is like, hey, I want to, you know, build this ecosystem and try to get business out of it. That pivots to, well, yeah, now I got these wine tastings and golfs and lunches and you know, the lunch and learns and I'm bringing in speakers. And I recall when I heard you speak originally is you guys were bringing in some pretty interesting speakers into Cadre. Can you kind of talk about how that really transformed, you know, when you decided you wanted to charge for it? How did you go from, okay, great, I'm going to charge for this, or I have this thing where I'm inviting people to do stuff and I'm just a giver, to, oh, well, by the way, I'm going to charge for this now? Like, that, was there some uncomfort around that? Or discomfort, excuse me?
Not really. You know, we found about 10 to 15 people. I run this organization with my wife, Melanie, and we had about 15 people that we reached out to be founding members. And we said, look, we want to try this thing. And the main idea was we want to attract and retain people that have a give first mindset, people that are in a position where they can give without the expectation of getting anything back. They have the luxury of being able to show up focused on how they can add value for other people as opposed to focusing on what they can get out of it. And so we had these founding members round up 3 to 5 people each. And then we pulled together these individuals. And for some of these lunches, these roundtable lunches that I had been running for my wealth management business for a few years, just to give them a flavor and a feel for what we were doing. And then we, after they got to experience it once, we said, okay, we're going to launch this thing. We'll see if we get a critical mass. I knew even if no one wanted to do it, or if only 10 people had said they wanted to do it and it would have never formed into a business, that taking the approach that we did would have, again, allowed us to meet a lot more people that we probably would not have met otherwise. And so the first year, we didn't do any larger events. We had 79 of these roundtable lunches. 79. I mean, it was like, you know, we would book private rooms at restaurants, and I had like a poster board with people's names on it and the lunches. They went to lunch. We did 8 lunches the first month. This person was at lunch 3, at lunch 16, at lunch 22. And I would just be moving people around to try to make sure they get to meet new people and experience new people and new interactions. And we never had the intention of doing a bigger event. What we weren't sure if we could translate the vibe, this sort of people, these people showing up truly looking to see how they can help other people. And finally, we got feedback from our members, which we do frequently. In fact, we just sent out like another round of feedback for our members this week. And they said, like, we'd love to try these bigger events. And so I was friends at the time, still am friends, but friends with Damar Smith, who's the head of the NFLPA. He had just sort of taken on that role. I asked him if he would speak at our first event, and that's what we did. The next one that we did was actually with Chris Brogan. And Chris sent out an email on Christmas Day. I'm about to show you how long ago this was. He was coming out with his new book on Google Plus. And he said, the first 5 people that buy 300 copies of my book, Google Plus, I'll waive my speaking fee for them. And he was charging, I think, $25,000 at the time. So I did that with him. And then it was sort of, I began to realize that one of the best ways to find amazing speakers is to find people who have books coming out. And a lot of authors, you know, end up leveraging their speaking as a primary marketing tool for moving their books. And so I would say 75% of the speakers that we've gotten over the past 10 years have been authors coming out with books. And we haven't paid them what they're worth or what they're normally charged, but because they are interested in moving a lot of books at a certain period of time, it's been a way for us to get some pretty awesome people.
Yeah, it's funny. So did you get my book that I sent you?
Yeah, man.
Okay, cool. I just want to make sure. I wrote a book in September, and because I exited my business, I was like basically just hanging out at the house and bored. And I got really aggressive about promoting the book.
Yep.
So I went out and started like really hustling, pushing the book, doing my thing. And when you're doing book promotion, which is goes directly to what you're talking about right now, you got it. You're trying to really get in front of a bunch of people. So you're offering stuff like speaking for people to get a bunch of books because you're trying to get the book numbers up because you want to get this critical mass. Yep. I'm still paying the book. There's so much work I'm doing where I'm like, oh my God, I was telling my sister, I said, can they send the books back? And and I'll buy the books back from them. And I don't want to do the work I told them I would do. Not speaking wise. A lot of it's like consulting stuff because my book's about how do you build a core value driven organization. So a lot of these folks, I'm building their core values for them. Yep. I mean, I charge people like $50,000 to build their core values.
Yep.
And they bought like 300 books. And I'm like, oh my man, I must have been really desperate to sell books. But
I mean, I don't think also, you know, you probably recognize this too. Like most 95% of authors, if you ask them, if you ask to buy 300 copies of their books 6 months after it's out, they're going to say no. Like they're only doing it for like that first week. You need to get like a critical mass in that first week. And that's totally where it pays off, I think.
Totally. So there's a guy named Scott Groves who he has a podcast and he's a friend of a friend. And he recognized what you just recognized. And he's like, hey, I have these 3 groups I want you to come speak at. How many books do I have to buy? Now I'm totally green. So I didn't realize I should have quoted a much bigger number for my book. So I'm like, I don't know, man, you're cool. Like buy 50, 100 copies of the book. He's like, okay, well, I need you to speak at 3 events. And I'm like, yeah, sure. Why? Like, because I had so much free time, I wasn't like managing my calendar that well.
Right.
And so I end up agreeing to it. I do like 3 talks. It's like, you know, and now, then I got busy and I was like, why did I agree to all this? And then I'm talking to him about it. And he goes, man, always get authors on the first week of selling their books. He's like, they'll agree to anything. Yeah. And he told me he did this with Ryan Holiday, right? So he gets Ryan Holiday to come. He's like, I think I bought like $2,500 worth of books from Ryan Holiday. And he came and spoke at like 5 of my events. And he said, isn't this guy that charges like $25,000 to $50,000 to speak, right? So I said, oh, that is such a great hack. Get people when, you know, get them to do the favorites when they need it most, which is that 1 week to your point. So that's really cool that you guys do that.
Yeah, we've had Ryan twice. Ryan's a friend of mine. We had Ryan on his, Stillness is the Key tour was the last in-person event that we did before COVID shut everything down. So, but yeah, look, it makes sense because look, the idea, I think that in the case of the majority of these authors, they're not trying to make a list for vanity reasons. What they recognize is that, you know, if you get on the list, you stay on the list because the way most people buy books is they just go to the category that they want to buy. And the category might be the New York Times or the category might be small business entrepreneurship. And they look at the first six books that are there and they buy one of those. And so, you know, like we had James Clear. It's crazy. Like we had James Clear 3 or 4 years ago for Atomic Habits. James Clear is still on the New York Times bestseller list today. Wow. I mean, it just keeps going. Like when my book came out, I think I've sold over 50,000 copies of my book now in wow. 8 different languages. I hit number one on Amazon in all of business for a day. But more importantly, I hit number one in 4 subcategories and I stayed number one in all 4 categories for like 4 or 5 months. It was crazy. Just I think people go there, they see the first book and they buy it. So yeah. That's the reason why it's worth it if it's done properly for these authors, I think, to speak in exchange for book sales.
Yeah, no, it's to your point, it's making the list to stay on the list. And I was a green pea. I didn't fully understand. I had a book launch team, but I learned a lot through that experience. And it's been cool though. I do think having a book is, and I'd love to hear your experience about this. From my experience, I tell everybody, I'm like, oh, you know, my book's going to be a sleeper. It's just going to be those ones. Because I'm good book. I have a friend, Hal Elrod, right? Who wrote Miracle Morning and do you know Hal?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, he's a friend of a friend and I become friends with him now. And, you know, essentially I was talking about this with a friend, the friend who's the friend of a friend who introduced me to him. He said, you know, you need to meet Hal. It took 2 years for his book to take off.
Nope.
And he basically said was like, look, if you write a good book and you're tenacious enough to stay out there, people will find out about it. And if it's good, more people will find out about it. I do obviously agree with you, getting on a list and getting a lot of people to just pick the list is the easier way to get in front of a lot more people. But what are your thoughts on as far as, you know, the books that have really transformed your business or your experience with how your book has transformed your business? What are your thoughts around that?
That's two separate questions, right?
Well, yeah. Two separate questions. Authors that you've brought in that have really, you know, that you think that have had the most impact, because we're talking about you bring a lot of authors into your business. So which of those authors do you think, man, that person's really transformed like the audience, or the audience has really, you know, gotten a lot out of them? I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. And then also for your business, you know, you wrote your book, you put it out there. How did that actually change your business in itself?
Yeah. So, you know, Ryan's one that, you know, we brought Ryan back twice because everybody loved him so much the first time. And he's got like a really interesting approach, you know, looping in stoicism and putting a modern kick and flavor on it. We just had Adam Grant for an event in February. And, you know, it's funny, I met Adam over email because Give and Take came out about a year and a half after we launched Cadre. And I was like, hey man, like we have this entire organization that's built around, you know, attracting and retaining givers. And it's kind of what his whole book was about. And so we sort of hit it off and we developed the relationship over time. And he took off really fast. I mean, I would have had him speak at Cadre sooner, but I mean, he blew up really quickly. So I was thrilled to get him for his recent book, Think Again, which is such a great book. It's one of the best books I've read in a long time. You know, so we've had a lot of great speakers. I mean, we've had Gary Vee, we've had Seth Godin, we've had Sally Hogshead. We've had a lot. And I think now what I'm most interested in when it comes to speakers is I want to find the topics and the experts speaking on things that are up and coming, that that are less about what my members think that they want and more about what I think they need. So we had a speaker in November, Annie Jean-Baptiste, who's the head of product inclusion at Google, right? If I would have asked my members, who do you want, you know, what topics are you interested in? No one would have said how to create better marketing, how to create better copy, how to create better products that are going to promote more inclusiveness with people, right? And so like that's another way of saying that is I, from my point, I saw a lot of white people, white business owners that were raising their hands saying, okay, like I want to have a more diverse team. I want to have a more diverse client base, but they're not showing up, right? And so this is more about how do you change your messaging? How do you change where you market, where you post jobs so that if you want to have that realization that come true, then you can go about doing it. So I try to have a nice mix between people that are really well known and people that are up and coming under the radar, leveraging the trust that I earned from my members of my community for bringing in the Ryan Holidays and the Gary Vaynerchuks to say, now I've got this person you haven't heard of before, but I think you're going to really like what they have to say.
Oh, I love that, man. That's cool. And you get a nice sprinkle of folks who, to your point, there's some brand equity around their books or their name, like a Gary V or, you know, Adam Grant's a great example, and Ryan Holiday too. Well, hey, I'm actually going to introduce you to, I'm going to give you value where you, because there's plenty of people that are going to get those three guys to come speak, right? Yeah. But where you're curating that new voice, before there was Gary V was Gary V, Gary V was some guy that Gary Vaynerchuk that you didn't know he was, right? Yeah. And then he blew people's mind. I had that experience, by the way, in 2009 with Simon Sinek.
Mm.
I met Simon Sinek when he was and Tim Ferriss. I heard both of them speak in small groups that I was a part of through Entrepreneurs Organization. And I went and had to a Mets game with Simon and hung out with him for a day.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. He was just like, but he didn't have a book, and he had no book and no TED Talk. Nobody knew who he was. But he used to give these little like coins. And it was funny because he blew up, same thing, really quickly. And I said, oh, your work's really cool. I'm going to introduce you to my friend. He has a private call with my friend. The guy doesn't even respond to emails anymore. But yeah. the funny thing is everyone's somebody, you know, before they're somebody, right?
And 100%, man. Yeah.
That's really cool that you guys do that. Going to your book now, though, I'd love to hear about how that came to be and how that kind of supports what you're doing with Cadre.
Yeah. So, you know, I think maybe unlike your book, because I was going to mention regarding your book that if you, assuming you're still interested in doing this, like you said, you can charge $50,000 to help people write their core values. I mean, I think that the other type of speaker that we get, right, it's the speaker that maybe they don't have a book, but they have a message that even though we're not letting them pitch, you know, my friend Marcus Sheridan says the best compliment any speaker can get is that people come up to them after they're done speaking to say, how can I get more of that? And so I think that for somebody that has like a $10,000 or a $50,000 offering, if you can get a captive audience and you can just educate and provide value, then that could work out for you. Me, on the other hand, I didn't have like, you know, a course when my book came out. I tried one later and it didn't work out super well. And, you know, I think it was like about a week after my book came out, I got a call or an email from the Pet Sitters Association of America. And they offered me $5,000 and my travel paid to come to Vegas to speak at their convention. And I said, yeah, that sounds great. And then like 2 days later, I'm like, well, I don't have anything to sell. Cadre was just DC based at the time. I'm probably going to spend $5,000 in 3 days while I'm in Vegas and going to be away from my family. So I backed out of it, you know, and I, you know, there's a mantra that I've sort of adopted that I borrowed and tweaked from the pastor of my church, which is I want to be more famous in my own home than I am anywhere else. And I try to use that really. I like speaking. I think I'd be good at it if I did it more. And I think I'll do quite a bit of it in the future. But again, my kids are 11 and 8 right now. And I think that the speaking opportunities, if that's, you know, the plan for me, will be there 10 years from now. But for now, again, also because I don't have anything on the back end, you know, not that I'm going to be directly pitching, but I don't have an answer. You know, the answer to my question, if people come up to me after I speak to say, how can I get more of that? The answer is like, I told you everything that I got. So,
yeah.
So it was more of a book that I felt like would help a lot of people. And I wanted to get it out there to add value and less about, you know, a driver of business for me.
It's funny. Like you and I did this. When I wrote my book, I was still CEO of my company and I had 1,000 employees. I wasn't doing it because I wanted to go promote the book. I literally did it because I had been helping CEOs, friends of mine and all these entrepreneur groups like answer their core value questions for like a decade. And I literally, you just said something that reminded me of why I wrote the book. I got asked by a friend who I helped him build his values to come do a talk at the largest orthodontics conference in the United States. And I was like, I'm not doing that, man. I'm busy, you know, but he's a friend and I wanted to support him. So I said, sure, I'll come. I said, I'll come, but it's got to be a fireside chat and you got to interview me. And so I come and do it. And there's about, I don't know, 600 people or something in the room. And it's an orthodontics conference. So you got to imagine they're talking about some pretty boring stuff that like even an I sat and listened. I said, I don't care if this is your field or not. It's boring. It's really technical content. And so I get up there and I kind of have a little Gary V in me, like where I talk shit I don't care who I impress. Cause I'm not trying to be a professional speaker for a living. Like I do care. I want them to give value, but I don't want to go travel around the world 200 times a year to talk. Like I'm just going to tell my content and it is what it is.
Yep.
And at the end, I had this like line of people. It was like 100 people waiting to come. I'd never done a keynote before. And so I had zero experience with talking in front of groups and having any type of response. And the first person says, is there like a course I could take on this or a book I can read or a class? I said, I don't know. This is all my work. Yeah, I would go and I didn't have an answer for her. Second question, is there a book I could read or a class I could take on this? To your point, like the biggest, I didn't realize you just gave me a huge compliment by way of the compliment you said your friend said that is, right? Yeah. And so by the sixth person, Derek, I was like, oh yeah, the book's coming out in June. That was the reason I wrote the book was because of what you said.
Yeah.
It was this compliment that was paid that this is a value and I got to get it out of my head. But it was to your point, it wasn't done with the intention of it becoming a business. Just now when by leaving the business and having the space and not having something to put my energy into, the book became the thing to put the energy into. And then I started helping people and saying, well, if I'm going to help them, then they got to pay for it because to your point, I'd rather go be the biggest fan of my kids.
Yep.
You know, if they want my time, they could pay for it and I'll create something beautiful for them. But yeah, that's cool, man. I love that idea around, say that quote again, around the biggest fans. You wanted the fans in the home. The quote you said was perfect. I'm butchering it right now.
I want to be more famous in my own home than I am anywhere else.
I love that.
It's cool, right?
That's so cool. I thought you were going to say something else. Do you want to hear what I thought you were going to say?
Sure, of course.
So I heard a quote once, which is that I want to be famous where everyone knows my name and they don't know my face, right? Wow. So I thought you were going to say that, but I want to be more famous in my... Say it one more time.
I want to be more famous in my own home than I am anywhere else.
And that just hit me. That's so cool. So... let's talk about that. You know, with you know, you've exited your last business. You're still there. How much longer are you in the wealth management game for?
I think it's going to be a while, man. You know, not much has changed. I'm still working the same way that I've always worked. They leave me alone for the most part. So it's sort of still like my partners and I are running our own firm. And so I do have like an earnout over the next 2 years, but I have like no intention of getting out. It was just more of an infusion of capital, more of a merger to give us access to more resources and kind of like a good deal for everyone. So I might rework, you know, the deal that I have with them right now, but yeah, not really planning on, in fact, the second book I'm working on right now is going to be more tied to the wealth management business, but it's my flow, my day to day is still, you know, is still kind of what it's been for the past couple of years.
Are you guys an RIA?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I have a buddy, a really good friend. They run an RIA out of California and they partnered with a company called Merchant.
Okay.
I don't know if you know those guys, but the same deal that they bought a minority stake or, you know, I think it's different deals for different RIAs. They bought a stake and then now they have like a merchant bank essentially and a family office. And it really gives them some economies of scale to offer to their book. They're about $2 billion RIA now. So yeah,
we just hit $1 billion of assets under management for our personal wealth management clients last week. And we've got like about three, including our 401k and retirement planning. But
Man, congratulations. That's huge.
Yeah. Thanks, man.
That's really cool. So you got that kind of steady as she goes and you got Cadre. Let's talk about the future of Cadre and the new book. And the new book is obviously wealth management. So maybe we go there first and then we talk about the future of Cadre. So talk about the new book and then we'll talk about Cadre.
So, you know, I realized that I think collectively, like maybe the best thing that I had done collectively for the majority of my clients was helping them realize, come to the realization that they were never going to want to fully stop working. So I work, I would say probably two-thirds, 50% to two-thirds of my clients are partners in big law firms, and they're making like $2-4 million a year. And I'm not talking like, you know, billing 2,500 hours a month into their 70s or 80s, but I'm talking, you know, working, you know, 10, 15 hours a week, doing some consulting work, some freelance work, some chief, you know, outsourced chief legal officer work, some, you know, serving on a board. And I think that, you know, a lot of people don't realize how unhappy they're going to be sitting on their front porch drinking lemonade for 30 years. And they're planning their lives. Like, we've all picked a number, 665 for most people, if you were to ask them. So I need to retire at 65. I need to have a certain amount of money. And I think people are making a lot of sacrifices in terms of the way they're spending their time with their family, the way they're investing in their health, the way that they're investing in their relationships in favor of, you know, making sure they have this number. And I think they're going to get to that point. And then after a year, they're going to say, well, I'm kind of bored and I have things I can contribute and I kind of want to do something. And technically, any money that you earn at that point is money that you really don't need if you had enough to not work again, and you can't go back in time and change the way that you spend your time and money. So I've done this for my clients, and I'm hoping that I can inspire a lot of people in their 30s, 40s, and 50s to just take a step back and think for a minute, like, do you really want to stop working altogether? Because if not, and you're comfortable with the idea, whether it's in your same job slowing down or maybe doing something completely different, doing something into your 60s or 70s or 70s or 80s even, you know, maybe you can take that extra vacation now. Maybe you can come home early and coach your kids' sports teams. Maybe you can go to the gym. Because I'll meet people that will say things like, you know, I'll meet them for the first time. What age, you know, what do you want to do when you retire? And I'll say, I want to travel the world with my spouse. And then I'll say, when was the last time you guys went out on a date? And they'll say, it's been a while. Like, you know, what makes you think that your wife's going to want to like travel the world with you if you're not paying attention to her now?
Yeah.
You know, I want to play golf 5 times a week in retirement. Well, you haven't been in the gym in 3 years and you just had your hip replaced and your sleep sucks. So what exactly makes you think that you're going to wake up one day and be able to play 5 rounds of golf on a weekly basis? So just trying to help people get better understanding of alignment and helping people realize that retirement may not be like the end all be all thing that we've sort of accepted it to be in this country.
Wow. Dude, you're rocking my world right now. So do you know Justin Donald from Lifestyle Investor? Are you familiar with him?
Nope.
I'm going to make an introduction to you because your book and his work like literally go hand in hand.
Cool.
It's all around creation of time. And his whole thing is like, you know, building assets that create cash flow. It's a little bit different than, you know, it goes against the wealth management model a little bit. But putting that aside, the idea is the same, which is, where are we spending our time to create value in our lives? And how many financial advisors are pitching, don't save that extra buck or make that extra buck today because you're going to make that extra buck tomorrow. And you need to have this. And it's funny you're saying it because I think there is a monumental shift that's happening right now around, and I think our demographic, our age, we're Gen Xers. We're probably the first group that's going to experience this where when we're 65, we're like, yeah, I'm way far from done.
Yeah. Right?
And I think our parents are probably the last generation where they're done, right? I look at my parents and my wife's parents, and they're all close to 70 or late 60s, and they don't want to work. I think that we're in a different, then I look at, well, none of them worked out on a regular basis in their 20s, 30s, and 40s. They weren't going to the gym and doing, you know, meditation workshops and all the stuff that we're all doing, right?
Yeah.
You know, not all of us, but a lot of us are, right? So I think that there is a massive demographic shift in from a health perspective. And I love the way you're thinking about this because wealth comes in many forms, right? I have a friend, David Osborne, who wrote a book called Wealth Can't Wait. And his whole thing is you have these different gardens of wealth, right? My family's a garden of wealth. My friends are a garden of wealth. My social network is a garden of wealth. My professional network's a garden of wealth. My health is a garden of wealth. My mind, you know, how mindful I am, that's a garden of wealth.
Yep.
So we have these different gardens of wealth and we can tend to those gardens. He has 8 gardens that he promotes, but it's a really cool way of thinking about it because most people yeah, I'm going to go travel the world with my wife. It's like, really?
You know, you haven't done it at all. Like, you know, yeah, one day.
That's brilliant. I can't wait. When's the book coming out?
You know, it's been 80% done for a year, but I finally just, you know, just with all the craziness of the pandemic and everything, I finally dusted it off. And so hopefully it'll be out like the end of this year. I'll give you like an example of sort of just one of many types of examples that sort of show up or that showed up for me in this, you know, in, under this framework. So, you know, my wife and I for, you know, for a long time now, when we put our boys to bed, we lay with them for a few minutes. When they were younger, it was longer. And then it was maybe just like, you know, 10 minutes. And now, like our oldest one, like after 2 minutes is like, okay, you can leave now. And I recognized probably like 4 or 5 years ago with my older one, I was like, at some point very soon, he's going to not be interested in me doing this with him. And I realized that, you know, for a number of years, I would be laying in bed with him, like, I heard him fall asleep. Like, I got work to do. I want to watch this, you know, show with my wife and have a glass of wine. And then I had that realization. And I said, you know what? Like, I'm going to start being present. Like, I'm going to start enjoying this. I'm going to start not wishing it would go by fast, not wishing he would hurry up and fall asleep, just seeing what happens. And that worked. And that was good that I came to that realization when I did with him, because I really leaned in even more with my youngest. But here's where you can take it to another level. I had this realization that hypothetically, in an imaginary perfect world, how much money would I pay when I'm 65 years old or 70 years old or 50 years old? How much money would I pay to have one night to snuggle with the 7-year-old version of my kid right now? Like when my kid's 19 or 29 or 49, like, I don't know about you, but for me, like, it's a big number. It's maybe like 10 grand or 20 grand, or like, if it could really happen, like, fit, like, I don't know. It's a lot of money.
Probably a lot. Yeah. Right?
Like, gosh, to just go back in a time capsule for one night, like with my 8-year-old, like, who thinks that I'm like, you know, worships me. Like, you know, it's a mate, like one night with my 8-year-old. So I'm going to start treating, every night with my kids like it's a $20,000 experience, you know, because that's what that's what I would pay for in the future.
Wow. Did you just show up today to just like mess with my head? Because you're messing my head right now.
Hey, man.
Yeah, it's like
your kids are still young.
Yeah, no. I mean, I've been doing it, but I've been not doing it as well as I want to. And I was talking to I have a coach, Jeff Spencer. My coach, I don't know if you know him, or he was Lance Armstrong's mindset coach. Great guy. He's an amazing speaker. He's an amazing guy. I'll connect you with him if you like. But really smart guy. He's mindset coach for Branson and Tiger Woods and Lance Armstrong. He did 7 Tour de France's with them. And we were talking about this around this idea of, you know, what is the experience in your life that creates gratitude, right? And because this idea that gratitude kind of, you know, changes our direction as far as how we focus, right? And for me, I told him it was specifically what you just said, which was my most grateful moments are when I'm just hanging out with my boys, like hugging them, and that one moment of just like arm around them, sharing time with them. And I didn't think about it from the standpoint of what would I do 20 years from now to pay for that moment again? And the answer is, I'm afraid to tell you how big the number is going to be, because it's probably going to be a really big number. I never thought about it like that. Wow. That's so cool. I love where you're going with that work, and I can't wait to, have you named the book yet?
No, I can't think of a good title, but I've got good people around me and I'll figure it out.
That's so cool. Well, hey, I know we're running over time here. Why don't we get it wrapped up? I'd love to have you, you know, let our audience know, you know, where can they find you? What's the best way to connect with you? And man, thank you so much for so much gratitude for having you here today.
Yeah, man, this was a lot of fun. You know, I would say that, you know, people that are interested in learning more about Cadre, now that we are virtual and sort of doing what we're doing all over the place, like we went from 75 members that were almost entirely DC based in March of 2020 to now over 130 from all over the country and Canada. And so we're currently right now, like, sort of planning what our hybrid model is going to look like going forward. But people are interested in learning about the organization, maybe connecting with some really elite high level CEOs, entrepreneurs, they can check out CadreDC.com. And I'm on Instagram, Facebook, same cadredc.com. And maybe one day I also got sucked into the Clubhouse rabbit hole with you. And as I mentioned, I haven't been there for like a few weeks, and I think I'm okay with that, but I might be back soon. Who knows?
Yeah, cool. Well, Derek, my brother, this was such a treat having you. Guys, check out cadredc.com. Also check out Derek on Instagram and the other social networks. We'll put that in the show notes. And man, so much gratitude, so many knowledge bombs. I'm so excited for the work you're doing with Cadre and the book that hopefully is going to come out soon. Man, what a treat to have you, my friend. I really appreciate it.
It was a pleasure being here, man. Thanks so much, Darius.
Yeah, thank you guys so much. Listen, guys, great shows this week and great shows coming up. We love you guys so much. Peace out. We're out of here, guys.
You are listening to The Greatness Machine, and that's a wrap for today. Guys, The Greatness Machine is all about two things. People who are living their passions and those who are creating greatness in the world. And we feature these messages and speakers so it can help you step into your greatness within your own life and your own business. If you love what you heard, subscribe to the show on whatever podcast platform you're tuning in from. And leave us a review. We love getting reviews for the show. If the episode made you think of someone who is leveling up in their business and life, print screen it, share it with them. Leaders are the best givers, and after all, we're all here to learn from one another. You can also go to our website, www.thegreatnessmachine.com. That's www.thegreatnessmachine.com. And on there, you'll see special tools to help you scale your business faster, show notes for the episode to help you integrate the lessons, and you will also get links that came out during the show. So on there, look, you can also grab a copy of my book, The Core Value Equation, which is a resource for helping CEOs and business leaders establish core values from their teams that don't suck. And mind you, a lot of them suck. Get access to this and more at www.thegreatnessmachine.com. With that said, you guys, look, thank you so much. I appreciate you. I love you. Peace. We out of here. See you guys next time. She's my lover.
Hey there, what's up, everybody? Darius here, and I'm here to tell you about my main man, Robert Glazer, and his amazing show, The Elevate Podcast. Robert is a buddy of mine, and his Elevate Podcast is second to none. So The Elevate Podcast, what is it? It's a conversational show where Robert sits down with world-class CEOs, New York Times best-selling authors, and the best thought leaders and performers in their field. You're going to hear stories about triumph, failure, resilience, more importantly, all the learnings along the way. So some of his guests include James Clear from Atomic Habits, Angela Duckworth from Grit, Susan Cain, author of Quiet, Morning Brew founder and CEO Alex Lieberman, and hundreds more. Every episode shares valuable insights in how to expand your capabilities as a leader and align your life and work to your most important principles. Robert's goal is that you're going to leave each episode inspired and with plenty of next steps that you can put into practice into your life. And look, if you're looking to elevate your life, your leadership, and your business, Elevate is the show for you. It's like I always say, we as podcast listeners, we listen to 6 shows, not just mine, but Bob should be one of yours. Subscribe to the Elevate Podcast today on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast platform. Check it out.
This episode is brought to you by the Yap Media Podcast Network. I'm Hala Taha, CEO of the award-winning digital media empire, Yap Media, and host of Yap, Young and Profiting Podcast, a number one entrepreneurship and self-improvement podcast where you can listen, learn, and profit. On Young and Profiting Podcast, I interview the brightest minds in the world, and I turn their wisdom into actionable advice that you can use in your daily life. Each week, we dive into a new topic like the art of side hustles, how to level up your influence and persuasion, and goal setting. I interview A-list guests on Young and Profiting. I've got the best guests, like the world's number one negotiation expert, Chris Voss, Shark Damon John, serial entrepreneurs Alex and Layla Hormozi, and even movie stars like Matthew McConaughey. There's absolutely no fluff on my podcast, and that's on purpose. Every episode is jam-packed with advice that's going to push your life forward. I do my research, I get straight to the point, and I take things really seriously, which is why I'm known as the Podcast Princess and how I became one of the top podcasters in the world in less than 5 years. Young and Profiting Podcast is for all ages. Don't let the name fool you. It's an advanced show. As long as you want to learn and level up, you will be forever young. So join podcast royalty and subscribe to Young and Profiting Podcast, or Yap, like it's often called by my Yap fam, on Apple, Spotify, CastBox, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.